Okay, we're going to start at the top of Kuf Ayin Daled Amud Aleph. Yesterday we discussed the issue of an arev. How does an arev become shubad? What's the din of an arev versus the lover in terms of ketimut, of who do you collect from first? Now the Gemara wants to discuss how does one become an arev? What is the language that one uses to become an arev? And how is that distinguished from a kablan, which we mentioned yesterday, that we said today's daf will discuss what's the difference between an arev and a kablan? And then we're going to see that there's also another category that can be created in terms of relationship between the malvin and lova and a third party. So the Gemara is going to discuss that. So we're going to start 2, 4, 5 lines down on Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Halveyu v'ani arev. He says, lend him and I'll be the guarantor. Or, Halveyu v'ani porea, that you lend him the money and I'll pay it. Halveyu v'ani chayav, lend him the money and I'll be, you know, obligated, I'll be on the hook for it. Halveyu v'ani attain, lend him the money and I'll give it to you. Hulan lashon arevut, pain. That is, a lashon arevut, that's how one becomes an arev. Whereas, if you say, tein lo v'ani kablan, give it to him, and I will be the kablan, right? Here again, the term kablan over here is used as another form of guarantor, but it's a much more involved guarantor. So, tein lo v'ani poreya, give it to him, and I will pay it. Tein lo v'ani chayav, give it to him, and I will be obligated. Tein lo v'ani aten, give it to him, and I will pay. Kulan lashon kablanutein. That is lashon kablanut. The key difference between them is that in the arevut, he uses a lashon of halva, which is a lend him the money, and I'll take care of it. Over here, rather, the instruction is tein lo, give it to him, that he is basically urging or encouraging the individual to give it and not to lend it. Right? As opposed to, if you say alveo, means that he's extending a loan, and you're just helping him to feel better about extending the loan. Tein lo means that you're the one, you're the trigger for him granting or giving this over. So now, the Gemara wants to know. Okay, when these were clear lashonot. Ibailuhu, halveyu, vani kablan. Alright, so that was yesterday we discussed the nafkamina between in the Mishnah, right? When we did the chasurim ekser in the Mishnah, the difference between a kablan and a arev. An arev, you always have to go to the loveh first, right? Whereas a kablan, you have the, if you say, you stipulate ahead of time, then you go first, then the kablan's on the hook right away. Ibailuhu, halveyu, vani kablan. Now what happens if he mixes lishonot? He says, Alveo, lend it to him, but then he says, ani kablan. Or, tein lo, he doesn't mention the lishon alva, but rather give it to him, vani arev. So here he mixes and matches lishonot, mai, what's the din? Amri, bitzchok, lishon arevut. Right, lishon arevut, if you use arev, arevut, then that's arevut. Lishon kablanut, you use the word kablan, kablanut. It's pretty straightforward, right? If you want to be, if you say kablan, you're a kablan, you say arevut, you're an arev. Right. He said, well, he used the language, but the particular definition, he said, ani kablan, and he said, ani arev. So he defined what he is. He used the lashon that could be used in the other form, but the statement, the fact that he made was ani arev or ani kablan. So that would be sufficient, according to Rabbi Yitzchak. Rav Chista amar kulan lashon kablanut hein, that everything, the default, is your kablan. Default is your kablan. Ela bar mi halveu v'ani arev. Unless you use a lashon that clearly instigates aveyo v'ani arev. I mean, unless you specifically stipulate you're an arev, the default is that you're a kablan. And Rava says, the opposite, Rava amar, kulan lashon arevut hein, you're an arev by default, bar mitain lo v'ani notain. Right, except for the lashon where you clearly indicate that you are a kablan. I mean, those are examples. It's not that, if you say v'tain lo v'kablan, also these are, all of them are lashon kablanut, where it's clear or defined that you're a kablan. So the Rava says the default is that you're an arev. To extend yourself to that higher level of kablan, you've got to make a statement, an active statement, to make yourself more than an arev. Right? The other way, the Rav Chista believes that by default you are a kablan. To reduce your obligation or to reduce your culpability, you have to say that I'm an arev and not a kablan. And Rav Yitzchak has seemingly a middle ground, which is if you say you're an arev, you're an arev. You say you're a kablan, then you are a kablan. And of course, we're going to paskin like Rava, because Rava is a batra, so we paskin like Rava in this instance. So now, Amale Mar Barame Mar the Ravashi Hochi Amar Abba. This Abba said, "Tain lo v'ani etain." Probably should be amended here also. Give it to him, and I will pay for it. Ein la malve ala love klum. There's nothing. The malve has nothing on the love. He can't go after the love. He can't even go after the debtor. Belohi, and that's not correct. Lo miftar lo b'minei demalvai sheyisav yitein b'yad. It's only true when the kablan or the arev gets involved, physically involved in the kinyanim. So there's, now will come out that there are three different levels and three different possibilities of how a certain person can be a guarantor. The one that the most extreme form is right here, which is basically that the guarantor, the kablan, the arev, takes out the loan, and then he lends it to the loaved. Right, so he's an intermediary in the loan, but basically he's the debtor to the creditor, and then the loaved becomes a debtor to him. So then you have a, fine, you borrow the money. What you do with it is your choice, so you lent it to the loaved. That means that the malvin now can only go after this middleman. He has no relationship with the loaved. His only relationship is with this individual. Now, if he can't get this individual, this middleman, then he can't go after the loaved, as we said yesterday, because of Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Natan, which is the transitive property of loans or borrowing, that you are my baldin, because since you owe money to, Levi owes money to Shimon, and Shimon owes to Reuven, then Reuven can go after Levi, even though he has to first go after Shimon, and it's his only baldin really is Shimon, unless Shimon disappears from the picture. Alright, so that's the Noseben Otem Beyad. The second level is a Kablan. By a Kablan, we did this yesterday, the Rabbi Natan gave a summary, the Rosh Ram does it today, but here you have a Kablan. By the din of a Kablan, you can go, the Kablan enters the picture because he says, Tain Lo, he's a more forceful or more involved than an Arev, in the sense that he's the one who basically triggers the loan. He's not saying lend him, but he's saying give it to him. Giving it to him, I'll smach what I'm telling you. So there's a lot more of a smichut adat when it comes to a Kablan. So by a Kablan, it's a machlokes, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and the Chachamim, about whether you can go to whomever you want or not. That has to do with what you say. If I want to, I can go to whomever I want. So in that case, by Kablan, the Rachamim say, go to whoever you want. Kablan and Lover on equal footing, right? As long as you stipulate that. If you don't stipulate that, then you have to go to the Lover first, right? Assuming that the Lover has what to collect from. As long as the Lover has something to collect from, you must go to him first, then afterwards you can go to the Kablan. Now then, when it comes to an Arev, you always have to go to the Lover first. Even if you say Amanat, they can go to whomever I want, doesn't matter. You still go to the Lover first, and you have to exhaust all possibilities with the Lover. That means that even if he does not have Karkaot, you still have to look and find whatever he has, Metaltalin, and you have to wait for him to come back, whatever the basic requirements are, that you have to wait for this individual until you figure out, exhaust all possibilities with the Lover. And then once you've exhausted all possibilities with the Lover, then you have to then you can go after the Arev. Alright. So now the Gemara continues. How dino the achte lamalve le nichse de lover. There was this Dayan who basically granted permission to the Malve to go into the possessions of the Lover, Mikame le Tave le Lover. Before they brought the Lover to Din, meaning that he owed him money, the Lover hadn't paid, whatever the reason was, but they didn't call him to Din, they didn't say to him, listen, show up, pay up, or, you know, they didn't warn him in any way. It just sends the Malva straight down into the Lover's property, he says, go ahead, you know, take what you want. So Rav Chanan Bereder says, throw him out. He says, you can't do that.
The Dayan.
Yeah, not the Dayan, but he threw the Malva out of the Lover's property, he was objecting, of course, to what the other Dayan did, but he threw the Malva out. So Amarova, man chokim lemevad ki hal milsa, who is so wise to do like this? Ilav Rav Chanan Bereder Rav Yeva. Right? Because it must be Rav Chanan Bereder, he's the only one who would have known so well, who knows the halacha so well, or has such a great understanding, that he threw this Malva out. Why? Kasavar, nichse debarinish inun ma'arvin yatei. So that the possessions of an individual are his guarantors. I mean that the obligation, we're talking about this by Shmuel, that a person who forgives a loan that he's already sold, why can he still forgive it? So over there we talked about many of the Rishonim view, and that when it comes to a milveh, there's actually numerous items that are generated. One is that there's a shibud aguf, right? And then that shibud aguf with it comes with the shibud aguf, it comes the shibud nechasim. That the Loveh is actually Mishabed himself to repay the loan. Then, along with him, Mishabed himself to repay the loan, enjoined with that is also a Shibud Nechasim, that his property or his possessions, because he's the owner of all those possessions, therefore become Mishubad to the Malveh. But it's clear, and here you see in this Gemara, that the Loveh is the first in line. The Loveh himself is the borrower and is the one who's Mishabed himself. Everything else is secondary. For their reason, the Loveh can pick what he wants to repay with. and that you can't just take whatever you want. And we'll see here, the other reason is because if it's not, and our mission says, someone lends his friend with a guarantor, lo yifra min arev, you can't collect from the arev. What does that mean, you can't collect from the arev? Lo yidva min arev tchila, you can't take it from the arev first. So if the possessions of an individual are his guarantor, then, like our Mishnah, you have to go after the loveh first, and then only after the arev. So it's over here, you have to go to the loveh first before you go to his possessions. He is the loveh, his possessions are the arev. So therefore, if you can't just send the malveh straight down to his possessions, you must speak to the loveh first, you must attempt to collect from the loveh first. If that fails, then you go to the arev. But if you never speak to the loveh, it doesn't grant you the right to go after his nechasim, after his possessions whatsoever. And the Rashbam over here, there's two things. The Rashbam, first of all, brings Pesukim to prove that Inun Arvin Bey brings Pesukim from Mishle. One pasuk is Ein Lecha L'Shalem Lami Kach Mishkavcha Techtecha. If you have nothing to pay, why should they take away your bed from under you? Meaning that the first possibility is that you pay. When you don't pay, then they take your bed. So that's the Arevut. And the second one's from Dvarim Yotzi Alecha Avot Achutza. That the loveh, you have to wait outside, the loveh waits outside, and then the loveh brings out what he wants to you.
So why did you have to be such a genius to say such a psalm to kick out the
malveh? Right. I don't know if it's... I think the genius was that the Shibra Kuf and the Shibra Nechasim are not on equal footing. I think that's the important thing that Rav Kanin says here, that they're actually separate. If you think that the Shibra Guf entitles you to anything, to basically anything the Loveh owns, because Shibra Guf also grants you a Shibra Nechasim. So you would think that the Shibra Nechasim is enjoined with the Shibra Guf so much so that it's all part of that Shibud. But I think the Chiddush here of Rav Chana is that he separates the two. It says they're actually two separate Shibudim. And the Shibra Guf grants you a Shibra Nechasim that's only by Midin Arevut and not Midin the original Shibra Guf. So I think that's the genius of what he says. That the Rashbam says the next one, Kaimel and Lidvam and Arev Tichla, says, Ein Lachon Latriach at Arev Chinam. You can't bother the Arev for no reason. The Arev is there as a guarantor. He's not the first line of defense over here. So you can't go to the Arev and bother him. Dilma Mafti Le Loveh. Maybe the Loveh will pay up. So you don't run to the Arev before you check with the Loveh if the Loveh is going to pay. If the Loveh is going to pay, why bother the Arev? The same thing over here. Vu Adin Nechsei Dinish. Lamene Zelzel Benechasav. Right, why bother his possessions? Right, why bother his possessions or be mezalzel in his possessions? Allow the malveh to go and handle his stuff, take whatever he wants. Maybe he'll want to pay. Maybe the loveh has a way to pay. Maybe he is going to pay. Why would you ever go to the arev first? That's the formulation that the Rashbam used. Right, next cases. These are another series of cases where the arev voluntarily steps forward and pays up front. What's his rights with regards to collection? So, how arva diatme? He was a guarantor of the yitomim. I don't think he didn't start out necessarily as a guarantor of the yitomim. Possibly, it was the guarantor of their father. And his father passed away, and then the yitomim inherited the loan. So, the part of the malveh mikamet lo dinu liatme. He went ahead and paid off the malveh before he ever told the yitomim. So, the yitomim are now the debtors because they take over their father's position over here. And once they take over their father's position, then they are the loveh, so we know before that you have to go to the loveh first before you go to the arev. The arev here steps in and just pays the malveh off before he ever goes and tells the yitomim. So Amar Papa, priat b'chov mitzvah. Paying a loan is a mitzvah. V'yatme lav b'nei ma'avid mitzvah ninu. And yitomim are not b'nei ma'avid mitzvah, meaning that they're minors. If they're minors, they're not obligated in paying because they're minors. And therefore, over here, the Arev, who paid up, is out, because they're not going to pay him. I mean, until they get older. Once they get older, then the Arev can take them to court and say, listen, now you are a B'nei Avid Mitzvah, now you have to pay me back. Now the Rashbam claims, here, that this is a Milveh Alpeh. The case here is a Milveh Alpeh, Porat Vachov Mitzvah. He becomes the bachov now, and it's an oral loan. There's a mitzvah to pay him off. If they're less than bar mitzvah, when they get older, then he can go after them because then they are b'nei avid mitzvah, and then he has a milveh al peh, that they can pay back, and you can force them to pay once they get older. Rav Huna Breidi Rishu Amar, Rav Yehuda says, no. Imar Tzrere Atafse. I'm sorry, Rav Huna says, no. Yitomim are always B'nei Avid Mitzvot. They have to do what's right. They have to, we're not going to allow them to walk away from loans. We're not going to allow them to eat other people's property. We're not going to allow them to keep loans unnecessarily. They have to do what's right. What's due right is pay back people who they owe money to. What's the problem here? The problem here is that the father, their father, who was the original debtor here, might have given money to the malve. He might have handed him cash or sacks of cash to be the guarantee for this loan or be some sort of repayment of the loan. Because we know already that there were suspicions. The fact that the malveh demanded there be an arev already means that there was some. There wasn't so clear that he could pay back. And that means the malveh might have demanded other things like, hand me some cash, let me sit on the money, whatever the reasons were, but there's a possibility that this loveh paid back the money. We just don't know. So that's what the problem here is. He told me to say to the arev, listen, it's very nice that you paid, but maybe our father already paid it off. Why do we owe you money? So for that reason, now you have, Ilkach, if you have the Rashbam, it's towards the last of the second narrowest lines, right before the big lines. It says, Ilkach, kol malveh alpeh, ikal meichash, dilma parei avon b'chayav. Any milveh alpeh, anytime we're talking about an oral, this is again, they're not coming with a shtar, the Baal Chov is not coming with a shtar, he's just coming to claim that he paid me. Right, so he has no shtar, we could just say, listen, he paid it off. Because afagam the kamelan bepirkin milva peh govim mina yershim, even though the din is a milva peh is allowed to collect from the yershim. Hani milikum shisham tua umit bisham te. This is a second, by the way, that we're going to turn the amud over. But that's if there's no way the father could have given him cash. What are the ways that he couldn't give him cash? One is that he was put into nidui for not repaying this loan, or he was in nidui for some reason, so he had no interaction with people. So there's no way he gave him the cash. But the other person is chayav modeh. When the father says, I owe the money still. In those two cases where you know for certain that there was no repayment, then the Yoshim are obligated to pay. And the same is true here. If we don't know that information, then they're not obligated to pay the Arev because they have the same claim. Which is, why did you go and pay him? We wouldn't have paid him. The loch is like Rav Huna Brei Yeshua right here. We don't say that Yitomim are not La B'nei Mitzvah. They have to do it. They have to do what's right. They have to discharge their father's loans. That any loan that it comes out that we know that their father did not pay off, or their father said, give the money to this individual, then we're going to listen to him. We don't wait for them to grow up and then to have a din. That the halacha is like him, and it does not matter. So therefore, when it comes now down to this din, it comes down to the din is that any milval peh, or according to the Rashi, this is a milval peh here, any milval peh, the Yitomim are obligated to repay, but they do have a claim. They have a valid claim. Why? Because the father has the same claim, which is that, and you will see that Tosfos mentions it, is that he can say, parati, I already paid it. So since the father has a claim of parati, we can be taninin, we can be tonev, we can be to'in on behalf of the tomim that it was already paid off, unless we have situations where it's clear that it couldn't have been paid off. What are the situations where it's clear it couldn't have been paid off? Again, we're going to turn the omud in a second, we're going to see this, is when he died b'shamtei, or he's chayav modeh, he says, I stole all the money. So in those cases, it's clear. There, he does not have to wait until they get older to be mishtayev b'din. He can take the money right away, it's no problem. In the case where it's not, then the creditor can take them to din. Once the Yitomim become gedolim, can take them to din and say, you owe money. And then they can make whatever claims they want. They can try to defend themselves. He can take them to din. But while they're ketanim, he has no rights to go into the estate. He can't take his money, until they get older. And when they get older, he still has to go to din with them to get the money. So that'll be according to Rav Huna de Brei Yeshua. What's interesting here is the Rashbam claims, this is something we've seen over and over again, which is that the geonim, established, it has to do with ketubah, they established it, and we've seen Tosfos and the Rashbam extended to other places and other principles, which is that the ketubah, we said is samchei ala karko, that a woman only takes the ketubah, and the smichot are the, what is encumbered, or the liens of the ketubah are on land. Because in their day, the only thing that was considered to be proper collateral, or to be considered something that you could always collect and wouldn't disappear, and had the most value, and everybody had it, was land. Land was the basic form of ownership, stored value. Anything you want to do, if you wanted to rely on something, you relied on land. The Gonim obviously reach a problem, right, which is that it changed. They become the, you know, Jews are the merchant class. That's much later in the Middle Ages, but even in the Bavel, you know, meaning that the change or the dynamic has changed, where not everybody owns land. There are people who are socharim. There are people who make money. Money becomes a money, and other objects become stored value, and land is not the primary vehicle for stored value. So the only made a takana that when it comes to ketubah, that the lien will not only be on the karka, but it will also be on metautlin. That you can collect a ketubah from metautlin. The Gemara says you cannot touch metautlin when it comes to ketubah. Meaning that there's no lien on metautlin, that the Gaonim say, no, that's not the case because things have changed. Why have things changed? Because people are somech on these things. People are somech on the fact that you have money. People are somech on your wealth or on your other, you know, if a person owns lots of art, or a person owns you know, lots of expensive goblets, people are going to be somech on that, that they can collect out of this individual. So that does become the form of collection. According to the Gaonim, it's based on the Gemara, so then the Rashbam over here extends that and says that'll be the same over here. Over here, by the din of, you know, Baal Chov, so here we said, Nirat Beinai, Devzman Azid, the Lechem Akarke Kolkach, it's 2, 4, or 5 lines up in the Rashbam from the bottom. See, today, we don't have so much land ownership. Avagav, the Kaimim, Metaltalim, the Yad Meid, Lo Mishtab, De Le Baal Chov. In general, Metaltalim of the, Yitomim are not Meshubah to the Baal Chov, meaning when it comes to Karka, the Shibud already existed from their father. And that Shibud existed from their father. When he passes away, the Baal Chov can, the creditors can come and take away the Karka, because it's not coming Mikoach the Yitomim, it's coming Mikoach of the father. On the other hand, if they don't have a lien on the Metaltalim, which is the case according to the Gemara, they can't go collect from the Metaltalim, because the Metaltalim belongs to the Yitomim. And then they're trying to take away from the Yitomim, that they can't do. But here he says that's not true. That even from metaltalim of yitomim, there's still a lien there because of this principle. Right? Says straight out that because of the way they did it by ketubat isha, the din has also changed over here. And he quotes one Gemara. That shows that in Mechuza they used to rely on the wallets of Mechuza. So it shows you that, even though it's a big ma'apacha, this is a huge chiddush in halacha, they're going against what the Gemara says explicitly, that metaltalim are not mishabed, but there is a hint to this in the Gemara at least. There's a hint that in Mechuza, they used to rely on the wallets. Because we know that what the whole issue is smicha dadat here. What does a person rely on when they lend the money? So in the Gemara's time, it's clear that they only relied on karka. It was the only thing they relied on. They didn't rely on metaltalim whatsoever. But we know that's changed. The reality has changed. All right, but in many halachas, the reality has changed. We don't change the halacha. Here, the Gemara has an opening that the fact is in Mechuza, they used to rely on the wallets of Mechuza. So you see that the Gemara already saw that there were exceptions to this rule when people were somech dat on a certain object. And here, the Gonim, who came and metakim with metaltalim, so here, the Rashbam and Tosafot, in places extend this chiddush to a greater extent, to even broader categories than ketubat isha. And here you see the Rashbam doing it. So now, the Gemara continues, my benayu. What's the difference between them? In the end, first of all, you can't collect from the Yitomim. And number two is, when they get older, you can go after them. When they become B'nai Avid Mitzvah, you can go after them. Or, when they get older, you can take them to the Din. So what's the nafka mina between Rav Papa and Rav Shua, and Rav Huna Vrei, the Rav Shua? These are the, we just saw in the Rashbam, is when the debtor agrees to it. So in this case, there's no chash of tzarei l'tarei d'kasvei. There's no question of the money is being paid, or he being prepaid, or having cash from the Loveh, because there was no interaction. Either he said, I owe the money still, or he was in his nidui for not repaying this money, or nidui in general maybe, where he couldn't have an interaction with him. So if that's the case, we know for certain he didn't pay the money. According to Rav Papa, the Yitomim are still not B'nai Avid Mitzvah, so they're not going to have to pay it back. On the other hand, Vuna Bereb Yeshua says that the whole issue here is the chashash, that it was paid back, the chashash is now removed. It's removed, you got to pay the money, and we're going to take it from the Yitomim even when they are Kitanim. Shachu mitam, shamtua meit b'shamtei, hilchusak rabuna b'rei de Rav Yeshua. So in that case, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuna b'Rav Yeshua, not just in that case, but basically the halacha is like rabuna b'rei de Rav Yeshua, that the, we don't worry, that Yitomim are b'nei avin mitzvah, and they have to do what's right, even when they're kitanim. The whole issue here is we're chushesh, whether it was prepaid, and when we know it's not prepaid, or it was not repaid, then we say to the Yitomim, they gotta pay right away. Right now, an Arev who's holding onto a shtarchov, enu gove, he's not allowed to collect with that shtar. If it's written in it that I received the money from you, govet, then he's allowed to collect with it. So what's the case here? Now, Bishlama Rav Yehuna Bar Avdi Yeshua, according to Rav Yehuna, we can explain this case. It's a case where Chayav Modeh. So in a case where the Arev is holding on to the shtar, which basically means that he paid, he's holding the shtar because he paid the Malveh off. He paid the Malveh, and the Malveh handed him the shtar. Now he comes and he says, I want to get my repayment because I'm holding on to the shtar. So in the case where he comes before the Yitomim, right, with the shtar, and he says, listen, pay me back, they can say, maybe our father already paid this off. I don't know. Why did you pay it? Why didn't you tell us beforehand? We would have made that claim. So therefore they say, we're not going to pay it. On the other hand, when's the case, when do we say that he can go ahead and he can collect this from the Yitomim? That's a case for Shchayav Modeh. When the debtor agrees to that fact. We'll have to see what that means. Rapopo Kasho. According to Rapopo, that's a problem, because Rapopo never has a position or an opportunity where you can collect from the Yitomim. He has no exception to the rule. It says, Shani Hotam, this case is different. That's why they wrote into the contract, Hitkabalti, that I received the monies. Who wrote into this contract what? Right, is the subject of Machlokas here. Right, the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rashbam over here both indicate that it's no longer classified as a mil be'al peh by the fact, meaning that if it originally what we thought the Arev basically is paying back the loan that was owed by the Loveh, but now when he comes to the Yitomim, he's coming as a mil be'al peh. He's coming as a simply an oral loan because he never borrowed from them, he never lent to them with a shtar. He's basically telling them, I paid money back, now you owe me money. That's an oral loan. So that's all he's coming with. So according to Rav Yehuna Bar Avdi Yeshua, nothing doing because, right, nothing doing when you come with an oral loan because they can say, Tzarei Atafse. But, Kishachayav Modeh, when the debtor agrees, then we would pay it out. And that's what it means. Kvar Yitkabalti, that, Kadavo Yitkabalti, I already received the money, meaning that I received the money from the Arev, I received no money from the Loveh, and they're over there, the Loveh, when he passed away, said I didn't pay it off, and then he's got to pay up the money. Here, Rapapa comes along and says, no, Rapapa has no exception to the case. So what is he going to say here? He's going to say, when it's written into the shtar that the Malveh says in the shtar that I did not, right, he says, Malveh v'shtar modeh Rapapa de gavina miyatmeh. T'lo amrin hocha mitzvah el chov mumtelet alem lefro bal kocham. It now becomes a shtar and not a milveh alpeh. So when the Malveh says, kvar hitkabalti, this is what it sounds like from here, that written into the shtar is now added in later on. It seems that the Malveh wrote in the shtar that I collected from the Arev, which means that the only collection that he made was from the Arev, and that's now written to the shtar. That gives tokef, or power, to the Arev to collect as if he is a balash shtar now and not a milveh peh. So that's where the Rashbam learns it. Kvarit kabalti means that when the Arev goes and pays the Malveh writes into the contract, look, kvarit kabalti, I collected from the Malveh, and hands that contract to the Malveh. That's it. Now, the Tosus takes issue with this whole sugya on a number of levels. Tosus actually on the previous Amud, he has a series of questions over here. Number one, one of the questions that relate to our part of the sugya is, so what that the Malveh wrote? What is the Malveh writing anything into the contract have any why does that obligate the Loveh in any way? Meaning that it's okay if the Loveh writes something into the shtar, then we can believe him. But if the Malveh writes something into the shtar, why should that obligate the Loveh in any way? Why should that make it a milveh shtar now? So that's one of the questions with our part of the sugya. The earlier part of the sugya, Tosus takes issue with the fact that we keep saying that this is a milveh al peh. I explained the whole sugya according to the Rashbam, that it's a milveh al peh here. He thinks that the whole sugya here is a milveh al shtar. That the whole sugya, even to the Yitomim, we're talking about all of the case here is a milveh al shtar. And therefore he has to go and try to reinterpret the Gemara. I'm going to tell you that it's not easy, what the Tosus does in the end. In the end he says that the writing here is done by the Loveh. If you leave it, it's an unbelievable statement he makes here. It's on the previous Amud. It's in the last narrow line of Tosus on the previous Amud. It says, Vaya nir lafresh, and dimkata bohit kabalti. This is the Loveh, writes in the contract, bohit kabalti goveh hayinu, hitkabalti goveh hayinu im kata bashtar hitkabalti min arev. I already received the money from the arev, shekach kata baloveh, gam arev betoch ashtar liapot kocho. Writes it to the shtar to give him more power, the dochako, so he can press him, lefatro lishalem chovo, so he won't have to pay the malveh, It's an unbelievable thing here. Basically, he writes into the contract. He was under pressure when he was borrowing the money. So the Arev signs into the contract. The Loveh says to, writes in the contract to the Arev, you already repaid the Malveh. I already got the money. Are you ready to repay the Malveh? But he didn't. So he's doing that in order to say to the Arev, you can come. Even if they come after, if don't come after you, you can still come and collect from me. So by empowering the Arev in this way, and saying the Arev can come to the Loveh no matter what, to collect, you know what the Loveh is not going to do? He's not going to pay the money back. Because if he pays the money back, he's going to owe twice. He's going to owe the, he pays the Malveh, and then the Arev is going to come to him and say, look, you wrote the contract that I already paid for, you owe me money. So in that case, the Loveh has incented to default and force the Arev to pay out, because he already owes the money to the Arev based on the contract. So in that case, we're not going to have a chashash that there was any repayment, we're not going to have a chashash, I have any questions about the loan. It's a strange case. but he wants to create the case where it's the Loveh himself that's obligating himself to create the shtar and the chov here. And the language of the Tosefta, that's what he said, the Ri says afterward, doesn't fit so well. But nevertheless, he wants this because he doesn't want it to be that the Malveh is writing it, but he wants the Loveh to be the one who's obligating himself over here. All right. Next statement in the Gemara. Ella, we have this. How arva the oved kochavim, the pare the oved kochavim. Here is a guarantor to a non-Jew. The pare the oved kochavim pays off the non-Jew. The non-Jew is the creditor here, and he's an array for a Jew who's borrowing from him. And he goes ahead and he pays off the oved kochavim. Before they went after the yatmeh, before they went after the loveh or the children of the loveh, before they went after the yatomim, this array steps forward and pays for them. When we worry about tzarei, ani mili Yisrael. That's only time about a Jew. Avodik chuvim given the butter arva azel lo chashinu letzarei. That since they go after the Arev, we don't worry about the fact that he has money up front. I mean, we saw that back before by the Persian courts. By the Persian courts, when it came to the law in Persia, that they went after the Arev right away. That they did not go after the Lovet Chila, they always went to the Arev, or they went to the Arev first. They didn't even get involved with the Lovet. If they wanted to, they could just go straight to the Lovet. So if that, to the Arev. So if that's the case, Luchashin Letzarei, why would you ever worry about Tzarei? Because, where's this Ovi Chachavim gonna go? He's gonna go straight to the Arev. He's not gonna go to the Lovet. So the Lovet, again, has no incentive to pay him. Samalei says, Adarava says just the opposite. Rav Ashi says to him, Afilu l'man d'amar lo chashinu l'tzarei. Even according to the one who says we don't worry about tzarei, ani mili Yisrael. That's what he's a Jew. Avorui kachavim came into dinayu butter arva azle. Since they're automatically go to arva, ilav d'afse tzarei miikara lo havem mekabule. If he did not give him money up front, right? Lo havem mekabule. He would not have accepted the arevut. So that's the. Fact is that they believe that the Arev is on the hook over here. What? So then the Yatomim would not have to pay this individual back, because the fact that he stood up and went and paid up front was a mistake, because we're chashinin le, right, we're chashinin le tarev. Here we are, Israel Mazari. Because when the Jew becomes an Arev to Ovi Chachavim, if there was no case that he had money there, he wouldn't allow him to come in baravut. Because he knows the Vadai, right? He'll come back after him. So this Arev would never agree to be an Arev unless he knew that the Loveh had given money or put some money either with the Arev or with the Oved Chachamim up front. Because when you're generally Arev, we said before, it's a din of asmachto. You really think you're not going to be the one collected from? You just, yeah, no, I'm guaranteeing that this person will pay. But if you're under Persian law, where you know that you're basically, you're on the hook. You're on the hook, just like the Loveh, it's no longer an asmachta. You're basically assuming that you're going to get hooked into this. So Rav Ashi says, if you know you're going to get hooked into this, you're going to make sure that the Loveh puts some money up, or make sure that this is getting repaid. You're not going to stick your head in knowing that you're really going to be on the hook for it. So that's what the Rav Ashi claims, that in that case, we definitely think to Atav say the Tzarei, because there's no reason the Arev Mikara would have stuck his head in if there was no Tzarei, either to the Arev or to the Oved Chachavim that were established over there. Right now, this is the next part of the Mishnah. V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon Omer, harev li'isha b'ktubata. Someone is a guarantor for a woman by ktubah. Right over there, we said that you have to go after the husband first, and then if the husband doesn't have and they get divorced, they can force them to take a nether that they don't get remarried. So Moshe bar Atzri. This is this individual. This is Moshe ben Atri. Arva de ktubata le kalate hava. He was a guarantor for the ktuba of his daughter-in-law. And why is Moshe ben Atri? I keep thinking Moshe ben Artsi, but it's Moshe bar Atri. Why was he even mentioned in the Gemara? Because guess who his son was? Rav Huna bre tzurmi rabbanon hava. His son was Rav Huna. The tzurmi rabbanon was a young talmid chacham. And like all good young talmid chachamim, he had no money. Right, he was out of money, he had nothing. And now he's running into trouble, and his father is the guarantor for the ktubah of his wife, who is his daughter, the Moshe ben Bar Atri's daughter-in-law. So Amar Abaye, Leka de Nezel de Naspe Eitzel Rav Huna. Who can we find? There's nobody who can go and give advice to Rav Huna. Did Engarsha the Debitu? Let him divorce his wife. Then he'll go collect the ktubah from him. He has no money, he has nothing to his name. Then his wife will go ahead and collect her ktubah from his father, who seems to have some wealth, or some was wealthy. And then he'll remarry her, no problem. Says Amalei Rova, V'hai Direno Ana Tanan. Our Mishnah is we just learned in the Mishnah that when you do this case, so you come to court, they force him to take a nether of that rabim that he won't take his wife back. So listen to Abai's answer. Abai, Ato called him a garish, but Beidin him a garish. Who says they're going to end up in Beis Din? Who says his father's going to know this din, or end up in Beis Din and get the right advice about this? So the Sofia Gle Milsa, the coin, how? In the end, they figured out that Rav Huna was a coin, and it doesn't matter, because even if, right, you can't remarry, or either way, so it's not going to help him. So Abai, I know Damri Inche, but Anyo Asli on Yuta. Right after the poor goes the poor, right? The rich get richer, the poor get poor. Here you have Rav Huna is in desperate need of the cash, and he has this eitzah that he can help him out, and it turns out he's a kohen, and the whole thing falls apart. So when it says, "Mi amar Rabbi, how can Rabbi ever suggest such a thing?" Amar Rabbi is our Rosh Ha'arum. See, I may say it's all the korban nechasim, Rav Shimon Gamliel, who's a horrible person. It's a person who gives advice to another person to act like Rav Shimon Gamliel nechasim. This is not Rav Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah, but the Rav Shimon Gamliel we see earlier. This is a remainder trust, where you give something to number one, and you say whatever's left over will go to number two. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said in the halacha that number one, if he sells it or uses it all up, number two is entitled to nothing. Because that's basically what the grantor, the gift said, number one gets it. Whatever's left over goes to number two, basically, in the gift. That's a remainder trust. And therefore, over here, when number one eats it all up, there's nothing left for number two. So anybody who advises, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, to go sell the property with the remainder trust, he's a Rosh Ha'arum. Now, again, if the person does it, it works. But if someone advises him to act like Shimon Gamliel, that's wrong, because that's not the intention they made. The intention of the grantor or the maitobi was that there would be something left over for the second person. There is nothing, there's nothing to do about it. But if you advise someone to go and use it all up, Shimon Gamliel, you're Rosh Ha'arum. So same thing over here. Abai is coming to give advice to Rav Huna to divorce his wife, to extract money from his father as a guarantor, and then make a knunya on his father and get remarried. So Gemara says, "Beno shiny. A son is different. When it comes to a son, then he's willing to. He's going to pay up. He knows, he's not going to feel bad about it. It's not something where we think he's extracting money. Why? The Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, why? Because in the end, where is all this money going to end? In the end, he's going to inherit him anyway, right? He's a yoresh of his father anyway. So in the end, he's going to end up with him. So we're just accelerating the Yerusha. That's basically what he's saying over here. It's a trust or some sort of disposing of assets before when one passes away. The tzurah and the rabbanon shiny. The other thing is that he's a young talmid chacham. So over there, it's also different. It's, I don't know if it's the two have to be combined. I don't know if independently each one is sufficient. But abino, the tzurah and the rabbanon over there was shiny. The Gemara says, "V'har reivu, isn't he a guarantor?" V'kaimlan arev the ktubah lo mishtabed. Right. So we said that an arev to a ktubah is not mishtabed. He's not on the hook. Gemara says, "Kablanu." He was not just an arev over here, he was a kablan. That goes well according to one who says, "Kablan diktuba, afagad vlaitle nichse the baal mishtabed." That a kablan is mishtabed himself, even though the owner, the husband, has no money. Exactly. Rav Huna here has no money. And then the arev, his father's coming in, and he's going to be mishtabed nafshei, even though the baal has no money. So mishtabed, then shapir, this works well. That whole case is fine. If the father has money, if the husband has money, then the arev here with the kablan is mishtabed nafshei. But if he has no capital, if he has no land, then the arev is just coming along. He's not. If the husband has nothing to pay with, the arev is not going to say, "Oh yeah, sure, come back to me." He knows he's coming back to him. Then it's not going to be mishtabed. Oh, so we'll see that in a second. So the Gemara says, "All right." So, So what can you say in this case? Rav Huna did have property when he got married, bishtodof, and it got flooded, meaning that it got washed away, it was no good. Somehow he lost the property that he had. That a father-son relationship is different than a normal relationship of third parties. By third parties, you're right. If the husband has no money, then the arev or the kablan is not mishabed nafshei. Whereas when it comes to a son, even if he has no property, the father is willing to be mishabed nafshei because it's his son. There's a kirvat hadat, and there's a relationship here that would the father would extend himself. Diedmar. So here, this is your question. Let's go. What do you mean? That is it. Arev d'ktuba divrei hakol lo mishtabed. Guarantor of a ketubah is not mishabed nafshei. He doesn't have to pay. You hear this? An arev does not pay when it comes to ketubah.
So what is
kablan?
Is there any nafkamina? What are you looking for?
Okay, kablan, the baal chov, divrei hakol mishtabed. When it comes to a kablan of a baal chov, everybody agrees that he's mishabed nafshei. Kablan de ketubah, v'arev de baal chov, plige. When it comes to a kablan by ketuba and a rei by bachov, that's where they argue. Mar savar, one holds. If the debtor has possessions, then the arev or the kablan by the ketuba is mishtabet. If he doesn't have, he's not mishtabet. That's one opinion of one of Mora's opinion. Mar savar ben itlay ben leitlay mishtabet. Doesn't matter that he's mishtabet nafshei. Vihilchasa. What's it? This is lalacha. Arev ben itlay ben leitlay mishtabet. That when a rave is always mishabed nafshei, whether he has possessions or not, bar a rave diktuba. Exception is in a rave diktuba who's not mishabed nafshei. The afagav the ilay labal. Even if the husband has property, lo mishabed, he's not on the hook. My time. Mitzvahu the avid v'lam midei chaseira. He's just trying to do a mitzvah, and we don't want him to lose out. What does that mean? Mitzvahu David. So that's the look in the Rashi. Mitzvah David. I'm a shadich b'shivugan. Here he's trying to create a shidduch. He's trying to get them married. Ain't that all? Lifroa harivut. He has no intent in paying this off. He's trying to just get the woman to be comfortable so that she will go ahead. Lo mi de chaser leisha. The woman doesn't lose anything here. Why? Right. So the tova tanit kaven. He really wants for her benefit. He wants her to get married because she really wants to get married. So she goes ahead and says, "Listen, you know, listen. I'll guarantee it, even though it's not a real guarantee." Even though the guarantee doesn't work. Right, she's happy to be married. Exactly. So that's the answer over here. Gemara continues. Amar Rav Huna, Shchimera, Shigdish kom nichasav, he was makdish all of his possessions. Right, Amar Manela Ploni, Biyadi, and he says, but there's 100, I have on his deathbed, he says, yeah, I owe this person 100, or I owe this person 100 zuz. So now when he says that, the problem is that he was makdish all his nechassim. So he's makdish all his nechassim, and now he has, saying that he owes 100, that means that this individual, this debtor, has a lien or has a money that he's reserving. He says that he wasn't makdish because it belongs to this individual. So Mar says that he's neman, he's believed in this case, chazaka in adam osek knunya al hektish. This person has no value in cheating out hektish, there's no value in saying that this doesn't belong to hektish, he should give money to someone else. First of all, it's chotev a little though. Number one, it's he's sinning not for his own benefit, it's going to someone else. And number two is that he's doing it against hektish, and people aren't so willing to cheat hektish. So those two reasons, we say chazak in adam will say kunina hektish when they're on their deathbed. We say they don't cheat hektish when they're on their deathbed. So matli flor of nachman v'chi adam will say kunina banav. Since when does a person do something to cheat his children out? Why? Rav Shmuel d'Avrei Tarvayu. Rav Shmuel coming along over here and saying, Shchiv Meira Shama Maneh L'Ploni B'Yadi. But Shchiv Meira says that there's a Maneh, there's 100 zuz of this individual with me. Amar Tznu, if he said give it to them, this individual, Nodnim, then we give it to him. Lo Amar Tznu, Ein Nodnim. If he didn't say give it to them, we don't give it. Why? Alma Adam Asui Shlo L'Hazbi'at Banav. Person wants to deflect from people that he's wealthy. He doesn't want his children to seem full and well taken care of. He doesn't want them to seem wealthy. So what does he do? He starts listing off all these debts that he has outstanding on his deathbed. Not that he owes the money, but he's just making up all these debts that he owes in order that he doesn't look like a rich man. So now when he says, tnu, he says, give the money. Nobody says, give the money, right, when they really don't own it. But if he just says, I have this debt and this debt and this debt, we say it's all a show to protect him against the ayin hara or from other people thinking that he's a wealthy individual. So Tosfos here makes some qualifications. First of all, when it comes to Hekdesh, the case of Hekdesh, we know before we're talking about Shchemira is allowed to change his mind as many times as he wants. Right? If he gives a gift to one person, he can change his mind and give it to another person. So why should Hekdesh be any different here? Shchemira is sitting there. If he says he grants it to Hekdesh, and later on he changes his mind, he gives it to someone else. So he says it goes to Hekdesh, and he says it belongs to Manet and Ploni. He changed his mind. It's no problem. He's a Shchemira. He can do that. So Tosfos says you have to explain the case where he's Makdesh when he's a Bari. So Makdesh called Nechasav when he's a Bari. And then only later on, when he's on his deathbed, does he say, I owe money to someone else. And over there, do we say that he's Neman? He's Neman because he's a Shchemira, and therefore he's Neman when he's on his deathbed to not make a Kununi on Hekdesh and to say the truth. And therefore he must owe the money beforehand, and it really belongs to this individual. That's number one. All right, and then the case here, which is, Tosfos asks, the basic question is, aren't Divrei Shchemira Ktuvim Umisurim Dami? Aren't they like as if they're documented and written? So why does it matter over here that he doesn't say, Tnu, give it? So he says, I owe so-and-so money, then you write down that, and then it becomes a shtar that he can collect with. If he has a shtar to collect with, why are we worried about it? So he says, it's very interesting. Tosfos says here, he qualifies that. He says, when we say that Divrei Shchemira Ketuvim Umisurim Dami, that's only in a case where he's giving out gifts, Shema Titarif Yadato, because maybe we're afraid that he won't finish. He won't finish up giving away all his property or distributing what he has to distribute. So therefore we say to him, don't worry, feel comfortable, because everything is going to be granted the way you wish based on your oral instructions. Aval, by a milveh, that it's not coming from his instructions. He owes the money, that's why he has to pay it. Over there we say no, that it doesn't become ketuvim musurin dami. Because over there he's not doing something that wasn't otherwise already extant. The loan is already outstanding. If the loan's outstanding, he doesn't have to say anything to owe the money. So the fact that he says something now that he owes money, that doesn't, we don't say ketuvim musurin dami. That's just like the malva comes from the koach that he had before, which is that he's an outstanding loan. For people who are granted gifts by the Shchemira, the only way they get access to these gifts is if you say ketuvim musurin dami. And therefore that's why it works in those cases. So now Gemara says, Hochanami, why don't we say Adam Asuilo das Biat Atzmo? Why don't we say the same thing by Hekdesh? Why don't we say that he doesn't want to make it look like he's a wealthy individual? So he really gave it all to Hekdesh, but then he goes ahead and says, no, I owe 100 to this person, I owe this to this person. So Gemara says, no. Ki amar Rav Huna otam denakit shtaro. In the case of Rav Huna, it's a case where he has a shtar. The Baal Chov has a shtar over there. So now if he has a shtar, he comes with a strong position. So Gemara says, Mechlal, the Rav Shmuel, the Nakin, that's your shtar. Rav Shmuel, he's not holding a shtar. So Amar Tznu, no Tznim, if he says, give it, me give it, Milval Pev. It's a Milval Pev, Rav Shmuel, Dami Tevayel, Milval Pev, and Govel, Domini Yoshiv, Domini Gluchuchot. Just because he says, give this money to an individual, doesn't mean that we're going to give it to the Yoshim or for the Gluchuchot. Why should we give it to them, that money? Both cases here is where he has a shtar in his hand. That's the case. By the case of Rav Huna, it's a case where the shtar is already mikuyam. Shtar is already mikuyam. You don't have to take it to Beis Din. You don't need to do anything. Right? It has a hempek on it. Therefore, when he says, listen, I owe this money to this individual, even in the face of Hekdesh, they should give him the money. But in the case of Rav Shmuel, the shtar is not mikuyam. It's not mikuyam, it doesn't have a henpek on it. Therefore, Amar Tznu, if he says give the money to them, that's ki'ayim l'shtar. It's as if he's mekayim l'shtar. It's as if now he validated the shtar and you have to give the money over. Lo Amar Tznu, if he doesn't say Tznu, lo kayim l'shtar, then it was a mekayim l'shtar. It's not mekayim l'shtar, then they don't have a right to collect with that shtar. So, what about the fact that there's mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames? He says Tznu, why don't you have to do mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames? So that's the Rashbam says over here, that well, that's because mitzvah l'kayim ames is only after he dies. If we say that Tznu means he's mekayim the shtar, we'll give it to him right away. We'll give these individuals their money right away. If he says Tznu, and then we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, that means that we wait till he dies. After he dies, then we'll do or we'll go with his instructions. But if it was a case where he says Tznu, and it's mekayim the shtar that's there, then we'll give the money right away to this individual. We'll pay off the debt before he dies. Because that instruction is considered like a kiyum hashtar. Alright, and then the Tosfos here goes through why he needs, over here, why do you need a shtar, mikuyam, and he's a shchimira? You need three things in order for this ma'ovet to come and collect, and it's basically in order to prevent him from having to take a shvua in this case, and also protect him against Hekdesh. Tosfos goes through why all the reasons over here, why why you need all three of these qualifications. Svishchimira, Svishtar, and Svishtar Mekuyam in order to collect here in this instance. And the last thing he says is that how come over here we don't say that a person is lo lasbiya banav, that a person doesn't want to make his children look rich, so therefore he says, yeah, I owe him money, or it's true, I'll give it to him. So the Tosafot says that a person will only say that in a case where the person is not holding a shtar. If he comes with milva al peh, the person comes with milva al peh, he can say parati, I paid it off already, and he's neman. So over there he'll say, I owe this person money, I owe this person money, so much money, because that's not obligating him in any way, because he'll always just say, I paid it off. So that's the way he would use that vehicle to make it look like he doesn't have a lot of money. But if a person comes with a shtar, and then he says, give him the money, he's not just doing that willy-nilly. Why? Because he knows if he says that, the shtar is going to kuyam, and the guy's going to come and collect it, then he has no way to protect himself. So the person's not going to obligate him, put himself in a position where the creditor now has got like a shtar, and he say the people are going to think he never paid it back. No, there he will never make that the vehicle for making it look like he doesn't have any debt outstanding. So therefore, when he comes with the shtar and he says, it's true, we say that means mekuyam shtar, and he's not joking around anymore, he's not trying to make it look like he has no money. All right, so we'll stop over here.